This is Sally, and I am completely delighted to be back with you for our live Turning Poison into Nectar Class 3. Let's begin by chanting. And we'll chant, we'll do the three chant practices that we've been doing for the last couple of weeks. First of all, we'll chant the mantras asking for the grace of the inner teacher. Then we will do the prayer offering our practice for the benefit of all beings. And finally, we'll do the special invocation that is designed to help us hold the shadow in all of its manifestations. We offer our practice asking that through the power of these contemplations and meditations, all beings may have happiness and the causes of happiness. We ask that all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. We ask that all beings know the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering. We ask that all beings, and especially ourselves, have equanimity beyond hatred, grasping, and ignorance. And may we experience the equality of all that lives. So having offered our practice for the benefit of all beings, we ask for the grace of our true self, the essence, the divine energy that unfolds constantly within us. We ask that the enlightening force of the universe surround us, infuse us, nurture us, heal us, and awaken us. We ask that the laser of truth penetrate any confusion. We ask the pure fire of awareness and love to hold the space for us to see, to know, to accept, to let go and transform whatever may be present within us or around us that obstructs our journey. And finally, we ask for the grace of the great Mahashakti Durga, whose festival we've been celebrating for the last 8 days. We ask that her grace, which both removes obstacles and awakens, be fully present with us this evening. And so it is. You can find a posture that's comfortable and upright for meditation. If you're on a chair, make sure that both feet are on the floor. And if you're sitting on the floor, it's very good to have something supporting you so that your hips and thighs are 2 to 3 inches above your knees. Feel the contact between the base of your posture and your seat. And as you inhale, let the base of the posture become heavy. And as you exhale, let your torso rise upward through the crown. As you allow the breath to flow in and out through your nostrils, maybe you feel it flowing down your throat into your upper chest. Perhaps you feel it lower in your body. But now begin to feel that the breath is flowing in through the center of the chest, as though the center of your chest were a window or a soft, open doorway that allows the breath to flow in and fill your chest. And with the exhalation, begin to sense the heart space opening. Begin to sense your breath flowing in now through the back of the heart, into the back of the heart. And begin to let yourself experience how behind your personal heart, behind your body, the great heart stretches out, appearing like a backrest, like a subtle backrest that supports you. And noticing that the great heart space stretches out behind you, around you, so that it is almost as though your body is held and contained in the great heart. The breath flows into the heart. The breath flows in through the back. You feel the breath touching the great heart, opening up the great heart. And with the exhalation, you feel the spaciousness and blessing, the loving energy of the great heart, which is the energy of the great mother, the great loving, embraceive, feminine quality in reality. You feel that energy as the energy of the great heart flowing through your body. So with each inhalation, the breath draws you into the spacious, loving presence of the great heart at your back. With each exhalation, you feel that presence flowing through your body and out into the room, even into the world. In this meditation on the Great Heart, which for some of you is very familiar and for some less so, what we're actually touching into, what we're practicing to touch into, is the energy of what we might call the divine embrace or the embrace of the Great Mother, which is in fact the force in the universe that can contain and transmute shadow. In fact, one of the really important insights that's been coming to a lot of you as we do this practice is that the way to work with shadow, the way to hold shadow, to see it, is really the way of the feminine. Our approach to shadow falls into two categories, and of course they must be balanced because these two qualities in reality are present in everything. The first is what we could call the way of the dragon slayer, which is of course the classic hero mode, where we go after our anger, we go after our eating disorder, we go after our sense of unworthiness, and we kind of spear it. We spear it with the laser of awareness, and then we work with it by, you know, kind of ruthlessly practicing to eliminate these qualities in ourselves. And the thing with this practice is that although self-effort, the practice we do to, for example, behave like civilized human beings, or, you know, maybe clean up the messes that we've made when we've been really lost in shadow, of course these are crucial and significant. But this approach has a problem, which is that when the dragon is eliminated, chances are great that it'll pop out in another form. So if you remember the Greek myth of Hercules and the nine-headed Hydra, which was a monstrous snake that he battles at one point. It's one of his famous battles. And you'll remember that with great effort, he managed to lop off 8 of the heads, but the ninth head was immortal. So whenever he struck it off, it grew back. And of course, this is a great myth about the psyche, because shadow qualities, as long as they're not held, embraced, and transmuted, are always going to find a way to express themselves. And when we haven't brought them to consciousness and done this process of actually working with them, accepting them, embracing them, making amends to the degree that that's necessary, and then allowing them to reveal their gifts to us, they're always going to jump out at us when we least expect it. And that said, of course, the Dragon Slayer approach is appropriate in certain circumstances. You know, when you're dealing with somebody who actually does really, really bad things in the world, example that we always use is Hitler or Saddam Hussein or a psychopathic killer, you don't want to embrace that person's actions in the Great Mother energy. You want to restrain them. And of course, we also have to restrain the parts of our shadow that clearly cause harm to ourselves and others. But in general, the secret of working with shadow is to find the way that allows us to alchemize it. And the energy of the Great Heart, the energy of the Mother, the energy of pure spaciousness, is actually the quality in the universe, the quality in ourselves, the quality in essence that allows us to see shadow, hold it with all the pain it causes us and all the shame it causes us, and heal it. Because the truth is, we can't heal shadow without the help of the Mother, without the Divine Mother Principle, who may or may not have been present in our birth mother, but whom we all have to find regardless in our own heart in order to hold the fear and grief and anger that make up our shadow selves. And this is true no matter what kind of original caregiver we may have had, whether he or she was nourishing or not nourishing, we still have to find the Great Mother inside ourselves. And in fact, it's actually appropriate, as some, you know, as we know, as we've been saying, that the mother energy should be the energy that heals us, because classically it's the separation from the mother that creates the initial shadow or false ego formation. In Kabbalah, which is one of the classical systems that actually echoes the way this is described in most traditional systems of understanding ego and self, in Kabbalah there are said to be four stages of the human journey. The first is the moment of birth, when we emerge out of the birth canal, and we come, according to the Kabbalah tradition, with longing, with desire, with desires that we've brought in from other lives, but also with the desire for truth, the desire for wholeness, the desire to be our beautiful selves. And then we meet the face of the mother, our primary caregiver, whoever that is. And the face of the mother, the face of the original caregiver, is the first mirror in which we see ourselves. So if the mother's face, I'm using that word, it may not be your biological mother, of course, but if the face that you meet when you first come into the world doesn't lovingly and fully mirror ours, that is, if we are not seen for what we know ourselves to be, then something actually happens to our own face, to our own self, because at that time in our journey, it's incredibly painful not to be mirrored. So our face begins to change so that it can be received by the mother, by the caregiver. Our face molds itself to fit with the image that we're getting back. And inevitably, this means that we distort our true face. And of course, this is the act of falling into, you know, what's called the false self, the egoic self. It's a part of the journey. It's a crucial part of the journey. It's what happens naturally to everybody. And then, of course, we have to deal with the incredible energy that it takes. This is the third phase, to maintain that persona, that face that's not quite our own true face. And that, of course, is when the shadow, the qualities that don't fit begin to be put into shadow. And usually that includes our original freedom, our sense of power, the bigness of our love. Again, this is how it is. This is how it happens. This is the human journey. It contains separation, the sense of falling, of entering into thickness, to density. And in Kabbalah, the return to our true face is called tikkun. Those of you who are Jewish will know this word. It's a big word in Jewish culture, which it literally means fixing. So fixing, tikkun, restoration, healing is another word for it. I happen to like the word fixing, but it means the return to integrity in the sense of wholeness. You know, we use the word integrity in a lot of ways these days, but what integrity really means is being true to ourself, to our nature. But the thing is that when we do the real work of tikkun, it also includes processing the aspects of ourselves that have gone into shadow, not only the greatness of the self, but also the distorted pieces that we've picked up from our family, from the culture, and also that we've brought in from past lives. So there's actually a lot of inner processing and work that goes into the whole process of tikkun, and shadow work is a big piece of it. So it is actually part of it that we self-recognize, that we be willing to own what we are in our light and more unconscious forms, to purify what has become distorted, to see the disowned parts, to forgive others, and above all, to forgive ourselves for all the ways that we might have betrayed ourselves or been out of integrity. And again, sometimes this can include making amends in some way, consciously fixing, repaying our karmic debts, because sometimes in order to own our light, we have to make some gestures that, you know, of amends. I know that when I first started seeing my shadow, which was, you know, actually consciously looking at my shadow, which was when I was in my 20s and first began working, doing spiritual work, one of the first things I saw was that I've been careless with resources, in many, many ways, wasting things, not taking care of my money, not taking care of my body, sometimes misusing other people. And I actually went through a period where a lot of my effort was in disciplining myself in these ways, in taking care, in balancing my checkbook, in apologizing to people I'd been inconsiderate of. And it was a big part of my journey. I actually needed to deal with some of those kind of obvious things before I could really look at the deeper ones, the more difficult aspects of shadow, the more painful aspects of shadow. So one of the things that happens as we travel this path of fixing, of healing, and that's part of the shift that comes up for us when we are actually doing our shadow work, is that we begin to become more and more in touch with what some people call our inner guidance system. That is the feeling state, the felt experience of our essential self. And one of the truths that we discover is that the essence operates through many, many modalities, including intuition, vision, etc. But in terms of daily life, the clearest way that we receive guidance is through our feelings. Not our emotions, but our feelings, through what Jung called the feeling function. And it often shows up as a sense that you're uncomfortable with something, that there's something that you're about to do that doesn't feel right. And these are, you know, or a pull, you know, like a deeper pull towards a particular path or a particular action. And these are actually signals from your inner guidance system that are telling you, go here, go there. So the pull towards something or someone, if your guidance system is undistorted, is a signal that you're being called, you're being pulled on your path. And the uncomfortable feeling is very often a sign that what you're about to do or say is actually out of integrity with your values. And of course, this is complicated because the feeling of discomfort can be resistance to the new, and the feeling of being pulled could be the pull of distraction or some old pattern. And that's why, in order to fully follow our inner guidance system, to be, in a sense, true to ourselves, it actually does require that we have looked at, made conscious, those shadowy parts of ourselves that will tend to distort or delude us. And one of the ways that you realize that there's a shift happening, and it takes a while, as many of us know, this is not immediate work, even though we can have big releases quickly and often. But the whole process is actually, it's the spiritual path itself. It's the work of our lifetime. And sometimes it does feel like two steps forward and one step back. But there are these shifts that occur, and And we actually begin to realize that the work is being done as these shifts happen. One of the shifts is that we actually begin to forgive ourselves. There are parts of our journey, of our shame, that we can sometimes for the first time really forgive. Another aspect of the shift is another way we recognize that the shift is happening is that we start to recover lost parts of ourselves. You know, often freedom and audacity and spontaneity that we may have put into shadow. And of course, the energy that we were using to repress our shadow side gets freed up. And that often happens almost immediately when you let yourself see your angry shadow or your fearful shadow or your rebellious shadow. There's often an enormous feeling of relief and release just because you've stopped trying to repress it. So even beginning to do shadow work, even though it's sometimes painful and difficult, will bring a new sense of aliveness into us. And another shift is that we become more creative. A lot of you have been writing in about that. You start to realize what you really want to do. You start to feel empowered to express yourself in different ways. And of course, the big thing is that as we do our shadow work, we begin to release compassion, not just for ourselves, but also for the ways in which other people mirror us, differ from us. So the real gift, the true gift, the deepest gift of befriending the shadow, because that's really what we're doing, we're befriending our shadow, is that it begins to heal the tendency to create oppositions, good and bad, light and dark, me and you, self and other, ego and essence, false self, true self. We actually start to recognize that all of these qualities that we see in ourselves and others are part of the wholeness. They're part of the wholeness. And that bringing together of brokenness and wholeness it's not only healing, its ultimate effect is to let us live in balance and ultimately to cure, to heal it. The great Catholic mystic Thomas Merton wrote, he's such a beautiful writer, I like his way of saying it better than mine, "The spark that's my true self is the flash of the absolute recognizing itself in me. The spark that is my true self is the flash of the absolute recognizing itself in me." This realization at the apex is a coming together of all opposites, a fusion of freedom and unfreedom, being and becoming, life and death, self and non-self, man and God. And the spark is not so much an entity which one finds, but an event, an explosion, which happens as all opposites clash within oneself. Then it is seen that the ego is not. It vanishes in its non-seeing when the flash of the spark alone is. And the purpose of all learning is to dispose us for this kind of event. So in our shadow work, we actually dispose ourselves to the great recognition of what we really are. One of the things that I've heard from a lot of people, and that is certainly my own experience, is that one of the core shadow experiences is the feeling that, you know, we describe as unworthiness, self-hatred, imperfection, not being enough, being unlovable. All of those qualities that essentially come down to the sense of imperfection, of not being good. And again, this is a core feeling in Kashmir Shaivism. It said that this comes about from the original separation from our divine wholeness. in human life. It comes from the experience of not being mirrored by our mother, by our caregiver. And it's what we're doing in this work, in this practice. What we're doing is actually allowing ourselves to embrace that feeling of imperfection, which may manifest in so many ways as anger, as grief, as jealousy, as its different manifestations, the cruelty, the neediness, all those, the approval seeking, all those aspects of this feeling of imperfection, they get brought together and healed in this process through the way of literally kissing and embracing the shadow, as in the story of Beauty and the Beast, which is really a story of shadow integration. When Beauty kisses the Beast, when she marries the Beast, it's like our quality of essential wholeness integrates the qualities in us that seem ugly. And this whole process, this whole healing is actually coming to recognize both and. The both and-ness of our human incarnation. The Jungian psychologist David Richo points out that even this beautiful idea of unconditional love has to be balanced with conditions. In other words, we have to be able to say, I love you unconditionally, but I won't spend time with you if you yell at me all the time or borrow my money and don't pay it back or continue to hurt me. So in other words, we are always finding balance between the qualities of opening and holding, of surrender and control, of selflessness and giving, you know, selflessness and giving and the quality of selfishness, of taking care of ourselves, of receiving the help we need. So this is part of what happens as we find the healthy aspect of the shadow, the golden nugget of the shadow. So you can refresh your posture. Allow your awareness to come to the breath. Feel how, as the breath flows into the heart, as the breath flows through the heart, it opens up into the back heart. You feel yourself fully and completely entering into the back heart. Breath flows in. The breath flows out, flowing into the heart and out through the heart. So in the very best mythic shadow stories, there's always a moment when the dark figure, the shadow figure, is befriended and gives us a gift. And one of the great stories about shadow work comes out of Tibetan Buddhism, and we're going to practice tonight with some of the wisdom that comes out of that story. This is a story which many of you know of Milarepa, the great Tibetan master, who in his early life was a murderer. He'd killed a whole lot of his relatives because he had his reasons, of course, but the fact is that he had murdered them, and in a state of great remorse, he approached his teacher, who was a great master named Marpa, and Marpa saw who Milarepa was. He saw his greatness, but also he saw his karmas, and he put him through a process that is one of the most famous stories in the world of Eastern spirituality, in which he had Marpa build 9 stone towers, and each time he completed one, Marpa would tear it down. And finally, Milarepa was so frustrated, he decided he'd never get the teachings, and he tried to run away and was brought back, and then he was told by his guru that actually all that hard work had been to remove his karmas as a murderer, and that now he should go and meditate, and that would take care of the rest of them. So Milarepa then spent something like 15 years in deep meditation in a cave, and now we're getting to the point. During that time, there were 5 really nasty demonic figures who tormented him, made fun of his practice, told him he'd never succeed in self-realization, all those things that the inner shadow voices tell us. And the demons were clearly, in some form, personifications of the shadow forces in his psyche. But instead of fighting them, and this was his great recognition, instead of fighting them, he invited them in for tea. He took tea with all the demons. And his great recognition was that if he invited the demons, the dark forces, into the cave, greeted them in a friendly way, offered them a cup of tea, that the demons became befriended and they became his allies, his protectors. So, in fact, this is really the secret of the shadow. It's what we do when we accept and recognize shadow in the ways that we've been doing is that when we befriend the shadow, when we let go of our fear of it, then what happens, as some of you are discovering, is that it becomes our ally. It becomes, for example, that wound, that shadow quality, when befriended, actually gives us enormous wisdom, often the wisdom that lets us help others and evolve ourselves. So the way of practicing with the shadow is really the way of the mother, of the feminine, of Beauty and the Beast. In Rilke's beautiful words, how can we forget those ancient myths? You remember this wonderful phrase, the myths about dragons that at the last moment are transformed into princesses. Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us act just once with beauty and courage. Perhaps everything that frightens us is in its deepest essence something helpless that wants our love. So this is what we're going to be doing in the next few minutes. We're going to be practicing with shadow in the way that Milarepa practiced, by inviting shadow into our cave, dialoguing with it, and allowing it to tell us what it wants and needs, and ultimately to become a gift, to give us a gift, to become an ally to us. This practice, this particular approach to practice, is a mystical practice, not a psychological practice. And it's based on a very ancient and rather wild Tibetan Buddhist practice called Chod, which was this particular version of Chod was practiced by one of the great yoginis, the great female realizers of Tibet, And it was adapted in this country by an American Tibetan Buddhist teacher named Soltram Alioni. I want to credit her for this. It's a particularly powerful shamanic way of practicing with shadow, of actually releasing the gold in our shadow. And it's in this practice, we do the same thing that we were doing last week in our homework assignment, that is giving our shadow names. But in this particular case, what we're going to do is allow them to be personified as demons, as demonic figures, and to feed them, to literally find out what it is that they want and what they need, and then to feed it to them. And I'm going to explain how we'll be doing it, and then we'll be practicing. So one thing to recognize here, first of all, is that our personal shadow qualities are often also tied to collective shadow. So they may be qualities of our family or qualities of our society that we've taken on that are triggered by our particular wounds or issues. And it's this quality in our personal wounds, this quality of taking on the collective shadow or mirroring the collective shadow, that in older societies were often personified as demons. And of course, they're not really demons, they're actually shadow. But there's something about recognizing them in this particular way and confronting them in this particular way that is, well, you'll see, it's extremely transformative. In this exercise, we're going to recognize certain shadow qualities are indeed like little demons, which sometimes just possess us, and I think you know what I mean. I have some myself. We give them names and forms. We dialogue with them. We ask them what they really need from us and how they'll feel when they have it. And we imagine ourselves feeding them with the quality that they need until we feel that they're satisfied. And as you'll see, we don't feed our shadow qualities, our personified shadow qualities, with what they want, because sometimes what they want is not so great for us. We feed them what they really need. And we're going to do it in five very distinct steps. So as we prepare to do this practice, I'd like to ask you, if you're sitting on the floor, to find a cushion which you'll place opposite you, because at a certain point in this practice, you're going to take the seat of the shadow quality of the demon. I'm going to call it a demon, really for the purpose of objectifying it, and because it's going to help us, actually see it as a critter, as a creature. If you're sitting on a chair, you'll want to put a chair in front of you. So I'd like to give you a minute to do that now. Find a chair or a cushion and just place it in front of you, or place yourself in front of it. So this is actually an important part of the process, to be able to get up and move your position so that you can become and identify with this shadow quality. So the first step, once you've found a chair, is to decide which particular shadow quality you're going to work with. And my suggestion is that you work with one that really bothers you. I know that some of you feel like you've kind of transmuted your shadow qualities. But if you think of something that, perhaps for some of you it's in your body, or it's a feeling of stress, the feeling of, being compelled to work harder than you'd really like. It might be anger. It might be a disease, a physical disease. It might be grief. But choose one particular shadow quality, and we're going to call this shadow quality a demon. The demon of fear, the demon of sadness, the demon of stress, the demon of a particular physical pain. And you're going to imagine that this figure, this demon figure, is sitting across from you, sitting in a chair across from you. And Before we start, let me just take a moment and give you an example of how it might work. I did this with a friend of mine recently, and she's been suffering from a back problem, and the demon she wanted to work with was depression, her shadow quality of depression. So I asked her to seat the demon, the depression demon, in this seat, and then describe it. Describe how it looked, what color it was, describe how it felt in her body. And she came up with it as a sort of sinking feeling in her chest, and that she said it had a blue-gray color and its features were kind of melting into each other. And then I asked her to ask it what it wanted, to ask her depression demon what it wanted. So she asked, and the demon said, to stop you, to paralyze you. And then she asked it what it needed. What do you need? And the depression demon said, I need joy. And when she asked, how will you feel when you have joy, when you've been given joy, the demon said, I'll feel relaxed. As she did it, she then did the next phase of the process, which we'll also do, in which she imagined herself, she imagined her body becoming liquid nectar, the liquid nectar with the quality of joy. And then she imagined herself, her body, being fed to the depression demon, the depression shadow, literally feeding the depression demon with joy until the demon felt satisfied. And at one point, after she had done this gesture of feeding the demon, she saw the energy being drawn into the demon, filling the demon up, and saw the moment when her depression got satisfied. And the way she saw that the depression felt satisfied was that it literally dissolved. It became a pool of nectar. It became a complete pool of nectar. And once you have completed this part of the process, which is step four, the next part of the process is to ask the demon to reveal itself as an ally. You ask the demon to just take the form of an ally, and then you watch and you see the form that the demon has taken. And you ask it, how will it help you? How will it protect you? And how can you gain access to it? And then you once again take the demon's seat and you speak as the ally. The ally which the demon has now become. And it will tell you how it will help you, protect you, and how you can gain access to it. And we're going to go through this process. We're going to do it as a game. But I believe you'll see, as I do when I practice it, that it's astonishingly powerful practice and astonishingly transformative. It literally gives you the experience of a shadow quality, which for this purpose we're calling a demon, becoming fed and satisfied by your offering, and then turning into a friend. This is a very, very powerful way of befriending the shadow. So now that you have your demon, your shadow, begin by bringing your attention into your body. And consciously generate the energy or the emotion associated with the demon. You want to find how this emotion or this energy is felt in your body. And the best way to do it is by remembering a time when you felt it. So if it's fear, remember a time when you were scared, a recent time. If it's anger, remember a time when you were angry. And just notice where you hold the feeling. Scan your body and find it. And see if you can find the place in your body Notice if it has a color, a shape, a texture. There's the feeling of the shadow quality of a temperature, that is it hot or cold? Sometimes it even has a sound that it might make. Now, as you become more familiar with the felt sense of this shadow demon, now imagine it as a person, as a demonic person. Let it take a shape and let it seat itself in the chair or on the cushion in front of you. You don't want to try to control the shape. See what shape your fear or your depression demon or your anger demon will take, will emerge. And notice, does it have a gender? Does it have a color? Does it have arms and legs? What are they like? What's the texture of its body? Does it have an age? Is it a particular age? And what's its emotional state? How do you feel when you look at this personified shadow being? How do you feel? So as precisely as possible, see or sense the presence of your demon sitting in front of you. And now you're going to communicate directly with the demon. You'll ask three questions, and you'll ask them out loud. And then as soon as you've asked the questions, get up, physically get up, and change places with the demon. Put yourself, seat yourself on the chair or the cushion, and then you're going to answer the questions. So first, ask the questions. You ask your demon, what do you want from me? What do you really need from me? How will you feel when you get what you need? Now get up, without waiting for an answer, get up and sit down in the seat opposite you. Your eyes are still closed. You're imagining yourself in the demon's shoes. You're imagining yourself as the demon. And take a moment to allow yourself to feel this demon body, this shadow body that you've imagined or intuited or seen, or just the energy if it hasn't been a visual. Feel it in your own body. Feel yourself becoming the demon. And in the demon's shoes, sitting in the demon's place, imagining your ordinary self in front of you. Answer these questions. What I want from you is, what I need from you is, going to ask them, answer them out loud. When my need is met, I will feel. And just let yourself be present with the recognition of these statements, these sharings, as it were, from your demon. Now, once again, get up from the demon seat and sit back down in your regular seat. And before we feed our demons, we're going to bring our awareness, our attention, into the back heart. So inhaling, feel as we've been doing, that you're inhaling in through the heart and into the back heart. And this time, as you exhale, you're going to allow your awareness to stay, to remain in the back heart. So you're actually observing the process that's about to happen from this very open place, from this spacious presence of the back heart. In other words, what you've done is brought your awareness, your consciousness, your self-sense, behind the body, and you're resting as awareness in the back heart. And with this experience of being seated in the great heart, begin to imagine your body melting into a nectar. It might be liquid, it might be a kind of misty substance. Your body is melting into a nectar that's made of whatever it is that the demon has said that it needs. And you imagine this nectar. Just let it happen. Just let it happen. Imagine that this nectar is being offered to your demon. And imagine that the demon is taking it in, maybe drinking it, or perhaps it's flowing in through its pores. And you just allow yourself to sense your body melting into a nectar or melting into a mist that feeds the demon with the quality, whether it's acceptance or hope or joy or strength, whatever it may be, that the demon has said it needs from you. Just let yourself keep feeding the demon and see how the demon accepts or drinks the nectar. Remember, if it's power the demon needs, you're feeding it power. If it's love, you're feeding it love. And notice, as you keep feeding the demon, notice the moment when it gets satisfied. And in that moment, you'll know it, because you'll feel it, or you'll notice the demon changing shape, or even disappearing or dissolving. Once the demon has been satisfied, at this moment, once it's been satisfied, ask it to become your ally. Ask the demon to become your ally, to become your helper. And then notice what form the demon takes as your ally. If the demon has disappeared, if it's dissolved, you can still ask it, ask the space where it's dissolved, to take a form as your ally, and notice what form it takes. The form may show up very quickly, or it may be kind of ineffable. It might be a person, it might be an animal, it might be a bird. And if the form that you see is amorphous, or if it's something like a rock, ask it to take a personified form. And don't worry if you think you're imagining it. The energy of your transformed demon, of your side demon, will take a form for you. And as you become aware of that form, try to see how it looks, see if it has clothes. If it's an animal form, notice its color, whether it has fur or something else. Let it become more and more present in your awareness and notice its energy. Notice the quality of its energy. And now, speaking out loud, ask the ally, how will you help me? How will you protect me? What commitment will you make to me? And how can I gain access to you? Now, once again, sit in the seat opposite you and become the ally. And take a moment to inhabit the ally's body. Feel how it feels to be inside the body of the ally. And now answer the questions. I will help you by... I will protect you by... I commit myself to... You can gain access to me by... And now, return to your original seat. Your eyes are still closed. Feel that the ally is in front of you. And allow yourself to feel that you're receiving the help of the ally. That the promise, the commitment, the gift that the ally has offered is being received into your body. You're actually experiencing the positive energy of the ally flowing into you. And finally, feel the ally melting into you. Feel that with the breath, you draw the ally into your body, into your heart. And you recognize that these qualities of the ally are now a part of you. and perhaps have always been a part of you. And finally, let yourself be present with the breath, allowing the breath to flow into your body through the heart, flow out through your body. And simply be present with the awareness of being yourself in this moment. The breath flowing in through the heart into the great heart behind you, flowing out from the great heart, flowing through your body. Take a deep breath in. Be aware of now your body against the seat, your clothes against your skin. And inhaling, let yourself bring your full attention to your feet. Actually, let yourself feel that you are present in your feet, that yourself is present in your feet. And let your attention move up from the feet to the ankles, to the calves. Move up through your body. Letting yourself be present now in your hips and buttocks. In your torso. Feeling yourself present in your back, in your shoulders and arms and hands, and then in your head. And just notice how your energy feels, how your heart feels. I'm going to give anyone who'd like to speak about what arose for you or ask a question, I'm going to suggest that you press *7, which will unmute you, and if there's something that you want to say or ask, this is a good moment to do it. I'm actually very interested in hearing what this practice was like for you. I'm actually going to be asking you to do it at your leisure at home and or with your partner, but just to let it become kind of a part of your shadow repertoire. But if anybody would like to tell us what happened or ask a question or anything pertaining to that practice, you can press star 7 and speak to us.
Sally?
Yes?
I actually am having a difficult time. And I'm feeling a little confused because what has been coming up for me, it's anxiety, but it always is the form or picture of my father.
Mm.
And I've done quite a bit of yoga nidra and energy. I mean, I've really been working with this a lot, but this is the picture that keeps arising. So the going back and forth and then taking, you know, that energy into oneself, I think there was some confusion for me.
Okay. So what actually happened?
It started out with my picturing anxiety.
Uh-huh.
And that form, then there's the form of my father sitting across from me with the anxiety attached. So they come together.
Together, right.
Mm-hmm. I think they're attached.
Right.
So I kind of just sat with that picture. And then it would just kind of get confusing because when I would ask what was needed, pain.
Okay. So maybe what you want to do is ask him,
mm-hmm.
what do you need to let go of this anxious feeling?
Of this what?
What will you need to let go of this anxious feeling? What do you really need? In other words, if what you want from me is pain, then what is it that you really need that's behind it? So in other words, my feeling is that pain answer is a mask and that there's something beneath it that that you can offer. And just see what emerges.
And you know, it's interesting what will come up is the request will be wants to be healed, wants to be at peace.
So
and I don't know how to offer that, I guess.
Okay, so yeah, I totally understand. I totally get it. So here's the thing. You don't actually have to know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can actually do this practice of just imagining your body, and it's important when you do this to sort of bring your awareness outside your body, even though it's not something we normally want to do. Just imagine your body dissolving into nectar. You know, into really a positive liquid, and you can name it peace or name it healing and let it infuse this being. So, in other words, you don't necessarily have to overthink this. It's actually a visual practice, and the thought of nectar or something that has a sweet quality to it will actually start to kind of begin the process of what it is that he needs, the healing, the peace. Does that make sense?
It does. It'll take a little sitting with, but
yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
There's something to it. There is something to it. I think there's a little confusion with the visuals for me,
yeah,
but
right.
And
well,
having said that, there's something that is coming of it. So,
yeah, it sounds to me like there actually is a transformation going on inside it as you contemplate it. And it may be unexpected and it may take a while, but like all of these deep processes, we often have to stay with them for a little while and let them unfold.
Okay.
So thank you for sharing your confusion. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Sally.
So you can always write me on the listserv or privately and let me know how it goes.
All right, thank you. And how do I unmute now or mute again?
You press star 7.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And we have two more hands up. One is the name on the phone is Dick Walsh. It's Madison, Wisconsin. I don't know if this is really Dick or someone in the house. But
Alestri is on 646.
Yes.
I think I got it. Hi. Well, interestingly enough, mine was fear. And prior to starting this, as you were describing the chud practice, I started crying in hysterics because I saw my father sitting, standing in front of me. And when I was living in Ganeshpuri, I had these violent dreams of a man wanting to break into the door with a hatchet. And as I shared earlier, my father was schizophrenic. And so towards the last year of his life, he was very wildly out of sorts. And so my shadow was fear. And I didn't doubt that it was him because it was so visible for a while. And I asked him what he wanted. And what came up was to be visible, recognized, and alive, to feel alive. Mm-hmm. And when I fed him the nectar, he almost turned into a little boy, just soft. And because I always remembered his eyes strongly, like, open. And then it turned into a triangular dome shape with light on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all very clear, and I'm not, like, wowed except for seeing him. And I do feel, though, I mean, I was crying in hysterics while you were explaining what it was going to be like for a while because I saw him the whole time. And but I feel just a lot of peace right now.
It's a very, very cathartic process when it begins to arise like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is this the Lishery?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lishery.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. That was wonderful.
So there's someone here with a 608 area code whose name on my list is Dick, and you're in Madison, Wisconsin.
No, that might still be me, Sally, and I thought I disconnected, but.
Are you 608?
Yeah, I'm Madison.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. So, okay, thank you. So the other person who's still on is 650.
Hi, that's me.
Hi. Tell us your name.
My name is Sandhya.
Hi, Sandhya.
I had a very powerful experience, but what I'd really like to talk about is what happened last week, and what you said about the three kinds of the three kinds of let's see, there's
shadow.
There was the three kinds of shadows: the individual shadow, and the family shadow, and the collective shadow.
Right.
And that helped me so much, because what happened after all these years, my 92-year-old father disowned me just last week. And I was working with this and realized that, you know, I had been carrying for so long this very dark family shadow. And it seemed like, you know, after all this drama with my mother and my brother and, you know, but my father was always the one who was my ally, you know, all throughout. You know, he and I were able to kind of stay above most of the drama. And then to have this happen, and so, you know, I was working with this, and then just before the call, he called me and he said, "Oh, you forgive me. Now I see that it wasn't you who did this, that it was all in my mind, and it was all my fabrication, and, you know, please forgive me." And so, you know, now it's all done, you know. But and one of the things that I learned from this, was that there was this freedom that, unfortunately, you know, I had this long practice, which helped me to not get too involved and not to, and so then that I was really able to kind of shake a lot of it off.
That's
and say, you know, really, I'm free. You know, okay, I'm finally just free. If that's it, then okay, I'm done with this family system.
That's fantastic. That is so great. That's so great. Yeah. And I think that is one of the experiences that is from what you've been saying, it happens quite a lot on this process as we do our own shadow work. We recognize that, in fact, not only are we free in these painful events, but we're also actually helping to free the family members, which, you know, as you say, is extremely cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thank you, and thank you all. And I just again want to say, as so many people have, how powerful it is to be present with so many of you doing such deep practice and sharing so openly and so honestly and with so much depth on the listserv. And I know that many of you who aren't sharing are having similarly deep experiences. So, again, I'm very honored, very, very delighted, very, very powerfully moved and actually transformed myself through this process. And I want to remind you that it's continuing. This is actually the beginning of the third week. We'll be working with this feeding your demons, feeding your shadow practice during the week, and we'll also continue the meditation practice. And for many of you, there will be practices that we introduced in the last week or the week before that you might continue to want to work with in addition to or along with this practice. But what I'd like to ask you to look at as you come out of tonight's call, or as you come out of your time listening to this, to the MP3, to really consider how the shadow, the demon, and remember in the ancient world, in the Greek world, the demon wasn't necessarily a bad guy or a bad girl. The demon was a part of your soul, a unique part of your soul, which manifests in positive and negative ways, but which is always an ally. So if you consider how when you actually feed this shadow quality what it needs, not necessarily what it wants, because remember, what it wants may not be so positive. What it needs is always something that brings healing. And as you feed it, and as it becomes satisfied, and it really can become an ally. So I'm inviting you and encouraging you to really look at how your shadow, your demon, can become an ally.
and to notice how it helps you, how it can help you, and to notice that when you ask it, how can I have access to you, that you will get a sense of inner guidance of what you need to do to have access to this ally, which is your shadow who has been fed with what it needs. And you may need to work with this guy, with this lady, a few times. You may find that one particular shadow demon morphs into another. But as you, each time you really let yourself see and dialogue with that being, that part of yourself, whether it represents an individual shadow, a family shadow, a piece of the collective that's embodied in you, or all of them, because of course they're all there, a little more healing takes place, a little more release takes place, a little more integration takes place, and more you can begin to experience how these shadow qualities, these shadow presences contain energies and powers that are enormously capable of helping in ways that we might never have recognized, whether it's through lending us their energy for creativity, for helping others, for realizing aspects of ourselves that may have been missing, simply for strength. They're powerful, powerful allies. So notice your ally and notice how you can bring him or her or it more deeply into your daily life. And one way to do this is to let yourself become familiar with the energy of the ally and remember it. Ask for him or her to be present. And ask for help, realizing that help may come quite subtly. It may come, in fact, as it is for so many of you through this process, in the form of a quiet shift, a quiet release, a change in the behavior of someone else in your life, a feeling of peace or settledness. And I also want to remind you that the listserv and the container that we all create for each other and ourselves is very much present. And it will continue to be present even after the week is done. The listserv will remain open for another week or so. And also, you can feel free to write to me. And just know that we're being so profoundly supported in this process by each other, by our own essence, by the helping, protective presences, what I call the deities, the energies of the divine, the energies of the great collective golden shadow, which is the true self, the divine self. We're being so deeply surrounded and protected in this process by these positive, healing, helpful energies. Because what we're doing for ourselves and each other, we're really doing for the evolution of consciousness. It's a deep and profound and incredibly needed process we're engaging in, and it has profound blessings. So I also want to invite you to next month's teleclass, which is on Kundalini, the energy of awakening. You can find out about it on the listserv. And for those of you who are in or want to be in the Central Coast of California on the weekend of November 9th through 11th, I'm doing a workshop at Esalen with Mark Goffney, who's a very, very gifted and deep teacher of shadow work as well as of essence work. And the workshop is called Falling in Love with the Divine. It's a workshop on touching into and bringing forth the love of essence in our lives and in our practice. So you're invited to that. If you're interested, you can find out more about it through esalen.org, E-S-A-L-E-N, or on my website. And I send you much love, all blessings, great gratitude. Have a beautiful evening, a beautiful week. You'll be receiving this process in writing. And let's just take a moment as we close. Allow our awareness to flow into the great heart behind us, flow out from the great heart, bringing its love and spaciousness through our bodies and into the world. Namaste. Have a beautiful, beautiful evening and week.